All right, so we'll say good morning. Let's begin. Let me just turn this on. All right, so we'll say good morning. So we're going to pick up today, Daf Ayin Hey, 75. We're picking up on the last word, on Ayin Dalid Amud Beis 74b. So the Gemara says the following: My Tanya Kavasid Rabbi Ami. So we'll say, remember again, just to reorient ourselves a bit. So he began yesterday with the interesting Mishnah that talked about again a Shomeres Yavam, a woman waiting for Yibum, and the Mishnah discussed who, if anyone, has the power of revocation over her vows. So for that we saw a three-way machlokas. Rabbi Eliezer says that Lamaisa the Yavam has the power of revocation. Not only that, but Rabbi Eliezer explained that even if there are two Yavmin, even if there are two Yavams, both have the power of revocation. Rabbi Yoshua, on the other hand, said that no, it's only one Yavam who has the power of revocation, but two do not. And Rabbi Akiva said neither Yavam has the power of revocation. Yavam in general doesn't have the power of revocation, since, again, according to Rabbi Akiva, Yibum also... So, again, that was the three machlokas. The way the Gemara interpreted the machlokas is that, according to Rabbi Eliezer, he holds Yesh Zega. Actually, let me work backwards. According to Rabbi Akiva, he holds Ein Zega, that although there is a bond between the Yavam and the Yavama, there is no marital connection. Because there's no marital connection, therefore it's not like they're in a state of erusin, and therefore halacha lemaisa he can't annul the vows. According to Rabbi Yoshua, there is zeka, and that's why again if there is one yavam, so there is the ability of that yavam to annul the vow. The Gemara says, according to Rabbi Eliezer, so what's the pshat? So Rabbi Ami explained that according to Rabbi Eliezer, the case of the Mishnah is kisha asa ba ma'amar, where even if you have two yavams, but one of them did ma'amar with the particular yavama. So that's about to say, if he did ma'amar, that's essentially equivalent to what? Equivalent to kiddushin. And that's why the ma'isa, he has the right to go ahead and annul the vows. Okay, so the Gemara brought a whole braisa yesterday, which tried to prove the fact that indeed Rabbi Eliezer, that indeed Rabbi Ami's interpretation of Rabbi Eliezer's sheet in the Mishnah, that it's dealing with ma'amar, is really correct. So now the Gemara says, so we actually ended off like right at the end of the Braisa before the Gemara actualized the proof. So now, my Taya Kavasid Rabbi Ami. So Rabbi will say, how do we know that indeed, again, Rabbi Ami's interpretation, that Rabbi Eliezer's Shita in the Mishnah is based on the fact that the Yavam did Ma'amar? Diktani, because again, in the Braisa, what did it say? Bein Sha'asaba Ma'amar. Because the Bryce explicitly said whether he did ma'amar or whether he didn't do ma'amar. See over here that Lamais is referring to a case where even if he did ma'amar, inami, the other possibility is, mereisha, from the first part, diktani, mishenichnasa, lirishusa, nigmara lo. Because the Bryce has said that when the Yavama enters into the rishus of the Yavam, nigmara lo, it is completed for him. Now what does that mean? Vi'idalo kaddish, that if there was no ma'amar, meaning if there was no kiddushin, then my nigmarolo, then ultimately again, what kind of completion is there? Tivshot minei kisha asaba ma'amar. Therefore, learn out from here that what's the case? Where ultimately again, the Yavam went ahead and did ma'amar. Fine. So now, ultimately again, what we've established is that we've established that Rabbi Ami's interpretation of the Shita of Rabbi Eliezer, namely, that Rabbi Eliezer's case in the Mishnah, of where you could even a case of two Yavams, but yet one of them has the ability to go ahead and annul the vows, what's that case? That is a case of where the Yavam did Ma'amar. But now, obviously, the understanding of that is that in a case where neither of the Yavams has done Ma'amar yet, then who has the power of revocation? According to Eliezer, neither of them. So says the Gemara, Mai ukshar dvarim ki nedarim, diktani, listen to this. So now let's go back to the Braisa for just a moment. In the Braisa, Rabbi Akiva's Shita is consistent throughout. Rabbi Akiva holds that a Yavam never has power of revocation. That's his Shita. And Rabbi Eliezer's logic, meaning the logic he articulated in the Braisa, is the following. He says, lo le'echad v'lo le'shtayim. Let me just read the Lashon. His idea was, Bein shas v'amamar, bein shas v'amamar, ukishar dvarim kein nidarim. Rabbi Akiva's shita, Rabbi Akiva's lashon was that just like the Yavama is not a wife to the Yavam in other areas, so too she's not a wife to him in the realm of nidarim either. So asks the Gemara, umay kishar dvarim kein nidarim diktani. What did Rabbi Akiva mean by that when he said that the same way that the Yavama is not a wife to the Yavam in other areas, so too she's not a wife to the Yavam in the realm of Nedarim? So Amar Rav Halki Katani, this is what it means. So Rabbi Akiva said to Rabbi Yeshua and to others, do you not agree that she is not chayeves in skila? Well, say we spoke about this yesterday. That if a yavama, let's say you have a woman, right? Rachel is married to Reuven. Reuven dies. She's waiting for Shimon or Levi to do yibum. And what happens? In the interim, she meets another man. She has relations with that man. So what's her liability? So again, her liability is she's violated a prohibition. Losia eshes hames chutzal ishazara. A woman waiting for yibum should not enter into a relationship with another man. But is she chayiv skila? Is she chayiv stoning for adultery? So the answer, of course, is no. So what do you see from that, says Rabbi Akiva? The fact, now again, remember, if she really was someone's wife, if she really had a connection to the Yavama, then ultimately what should happen? She should be chayeves and skila. But lemaisa, again, the fact that she's not indicates to us what? That she's not really his wife. Therefore, Rabbi Akiva says the same way that she's not chayeves and skila like an Ara Murasa, so too, again, the husband doesn't have the ability to go ahead and annul her vows. Amar Avashi, mas nisin nami, deko. So Rashi says, our Mishnah reflects this view as well. Ein, or I should say, a Mishnah. This is not our Mishnah. It's quoting from another Mishnah. Ein yavama gimura liisha, kishem sharusa gimura liisha. But also, you actually have a Mishnah that explicitly says this. And the explicit statement of the Mishnah is that a yavama does not have an explicit relationship or a complete relationship to her yavam in the same way that an arusa has a complete relationship to her husband. So here, Abba Sevi Gemara says it quite unequivocally clear that although there is, here's what everybody will agree with. Is there a connection between the Yavama and the Yavam? Of course there is. Of course there is. That's not a Shaila. The Machlokas just is on the nature, extent, profundity, and strength of the bond between the two of them. So clearly on one hand you have Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer saying, that bond pretty much is like Erison. Pretty much is like Erison. Just the difference is that Rabbi Yeshua will say it can only apply in the case of where there's one Yavam, because then the relationship is clearly defined. Rabbi Eliezer will say that it can even go ahead and apply in the case of two Yavmin, as long as one of them did Yibum. That's on one hand. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva will say, no. What did I say? Yibum. I'm sorry, Ma'amar, thank you. Did Ma'amar, thank you. So as long as one of them did Ma'amar, according to Rabbi Ezra. On the other hand, Rabbi Akiva would say, no. True, there's definitely a bond. There's definitely a bond of sorts. Is that a marital bond? No, Rabbi Akiva would almost say it's almost like a bond of engagement. There's a commitment to do something, whatever that something is, Yibum or Chalitza, but it is not a marital bond, and therefore, according to Rabbi Akiva, ultimately, again, Yavam has no power to go and null the vows. Rabbi will say, now, how do we paskin in this case? So listen to this. So the Shulchan Aruch, again, as you've already come to see, Simon Reish Lamed Dalet is the Simon to learn in Yardea for these halachas. So listen to this. So Simon Reish Lamed Dalet, Sif Zayin, Shomeres Yavam, a woman who is waiting for Yibum, Ein Hayavam Mefer, Afilu Ein Sham Ela Yavam Echad, Va'afilu Asaba Ma'amar. So I said, Shulchan Aruch Paskin is like Rabbi Akiva. Namely, again, if a woman is waiting for Yibum, so the Yavam does not have the ability to annul her vows. That is true, even if what? Even if there's only one Yavam, and even if he did Ma'amar. Now, both remember again, the logic behind that, meaning you'll see to yourself, but one second, why doesn't Ma'amar work? Why doesn't Ma'amar work? Because remember again, Rabbi said the argument that Rabbi Akiva advanced earlier on, which is, let's play this out, right? Reuven dies, leaves behind the widow Rachel. Reuven also leaves behind two brothers, Shimon and Levi. So let's say Shimon does Ma'amar. Let's say Levi, then goes ahead and has Bia with Rachel. What's the halacha? Right? So remember again, they're married. I mean, I'm not about the family dynamics, Asala, right? I'm saying, like, they're married. So what do you see from there? You see from there that as much as Ma'amar creates a bond, it does not affect Yibum. Therefore, the halacha says, well, one second, if you're telling me that even after Ma'amar with Shimon, Levi could still technically do Yibum with Rachel, then Ma'amar is not really a marital bond. It's an intention to marry, it's a declaration to marry, but it's not a bond. Therefore, the halacha paskins like Rabbi Akiva and a Yavam, whether it's one Yavam, even if he did Ma'amar, does not have the ability to annul vows, says the Mishnah. Ha'omer the Ishtar, I'll say this, actually we saw this case quoted a little bit earlier on. So Omer the Ishtar, a man says to his wife, Kol nidarim shetaduri mikan ach avol mimakom ploni. Listen to this. So a man says to his wife, listen, any neder that you're going to make, mikan, from now until I come back from this particular place. His husband's going away on a trip. So he says, look, I'm going to be gone for the next week. So any nidarim you make from now until I return from my trip, Hare hein kayamin. The nidarim are upheld. So what's the halacha? Lo amar klum. So such a statement is meaningless. And I'm about to say, now why is such a statement meaningless? Because the Maisa, again here, if you take a look, Hare hein, and look at the Ran for just a moment. Hare hein kayam lo amar klum. The dafkalin yin afara amar b'lozim mufar, we'll see again in just a moment. Yeah, about hafaras nidarim. Skip down a little bit. Actually, you know what? Instead of looking there, go ahead and look at the Rush for just a moment. I'm sorry. The Rush is almost right across in the right-hand margin of the page. So, Hari Hin Kayum Lot Mar Klum, Kedeprishis La'el, Tahabi Le Kiyum Betos, Lefishiyesh Nedarim Shlo Yachbot. So the first thing the Rush says is because such an upholding of Nedarim is a flawed upholding of Nedarim, because there might be things the wife says that at the end of the day the husband does not want upheld. So the point ultimately again that the Rush is making is he calls it a kiyum betos. He says, how can you go ahead and just blanketly go ahead and uphold any single neder that she may make when there may clearly be things ultimately that as a husband you would not want her to make? So therefore he calls it a kiyum betos. It doesn't work. Fine. On the other hand, Harahin Mufarin, what happens if the husband said the opposite? Any neder you make between now and when I return should be what? Should be void, should be annulled. What's the halacha? Rabbi Eliezer Omer Mufar. Rabbi Eliezer says it works. The Chachamim Omerim Eino Mufar. And the Chachamim say it does not work. Macholkis Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Omer Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer says, one second. Im Hafer Nedarim Shabao Lichlal Iser. Lo Yafer Nedarim Shabao Lichlal Iser. Well, so Rabbi Eliezer's logic is like this. If a husband has the ability to annul vows that have already been made and are already usser, all the more so he should have the ability to annul the vows even before they ever become usser. What Rabbi Eliezer is saying is like this. Intuitively, it should be harder to undo something than it is to what? To prevent it from ever occurring. So if you're telling me that a husband has the right to annul his wife's nedarim once she has already made them. And I'll say, by the way, we're talking about over here, we've left Erusin, we're already into Nisuin at this point. So remember, in Nisuin, it is the husband by himself who has the right of revocation. The exclusive right of revocation is with him. So if you're telling me that a husband has the right and the ability to go ahead and annul vows, when what? When he's going ahead, when she's already made them, when they're already usher, so the more so he should have the ability to go ahead and revoke them, or I should say prevent them from ever occurring and revoke them proactively, to which the Gemara says, so Amru lo, so the Chacham said, really, Ezra, what are you talking about? Harehu Omer, it's a Pasuk. Yishayi kimenu, v'yishayi ferenu. Pasuk says a husband has the right to uphold them, or a husband has the right to annul them. Es sheba lichlal hakim, ba lichlal hafer. I will say, only a neder that has the ability to be upheld has the ability to be annulled. Lo balich lal hakein, but if a neder can't be upheld, then what? Lo balich lal hafer, then a neder can't be annulled. In other words, we both say, what the Chachamim say is, Torah is creating an equivalency between uphold affirmation of the nedarim and revocation of the nedarim. Now, what did we just establish in the beginning of the Mishnah? That everybody agrees that what? That a husband cannot proactively annul a vow. Excuse me. Husband cannot proactively uphold a vow. What's the logic behind that? Again, at least according to the Rush, kiyum betazi. You can't do it. It doesn't make sense. You have to know what you're upholding. So the Chachamim will say like this. The fact that the Torah says, the Pasuk says, that a husband will uphold it, a husband will annul it, it's equating those two processes. So whatever type of neder can be upheld, that's the same type of neder that could be annulled. But the type of neder that cannot be upheld can also not be annulled. Therefore, the same way you can't uphold a neder that you do not know about, therefore what? You can't annul that type of neder as well. So both sides. So this is the fundamental machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim in the Mishnah. Everyone's going to agree that you cannot proactively uphold the neder. So let's assume for now everybody agrees with that. The fundamental machlokes is going to be on proactive revocation. Rabbi Eliezer says you can, Chachamim say you can't. Rabbi Eliezer's logic is based, it appears to be almost like on a kavachomer. You know, if you could revoke vows that have already become asur, you could of course revoke vows before they ever become asur. Chachamim basing it on a pasuk, ishayi kemenu ve'ishayi feirenu, only vows that could be upheld could be revoked, but vows that can't be upheld ultimately cannot be revoked. Says the Gemara.
I thought you had to hear it.
I'm sorry?
I thought you had to hear it. How could you revoke a vow that you haven't even heard yet?
So that's the machlokes. So Rabbi Eliezer clearly does not subscribe to that idea. Rabbi Eliezer, remember, Rabbi Eliezer is advancing a kavachomer. He's not going with the hearing idea. He's saying you could proactively annul vows, which by definition means you do not have to hear it. That's the not. Chachamim agree with what you're saying. Says the Gemara.
Does it become nullified from when he hears it retroactively? Oh, so
this, in this case over here, this goes back to what we learned before, that in reality, now, right. So, so the answer to that is yes. I mean, we're going to see this in the Gemara, but very quickly, remember, we learned this already. And the way, the mechanics that we establish for the way this case works is, he's creating a retroactivity clause, and in reality, the retroactivity clause is triggered by the moment in which he actually hears it. Right? That, remember, he's away, he comes back, he hears the neder. Oh, once he hears it, it triggers this retroactive clause that was made before he left, and ultimately, again, it annuls the vow like that. That's according to one opinion, how the mechanics of this is going to work, which, again, addresses your point, because he's hearing it first, and then it triggers the retroactivity. But we're going to have to see if that's the only Rabbi Eliezer sheet that works or not. Says the Gemara, Iboy Lehu. So here's the kasha. It also is actually a very interesting fundamental question. Iboy Lehu. The Rabbi Eliezer, Mechel Cholin Ubetelin, O Dilma lo chalin klal. So I'll say, let's analyze this for just a moment. If a man says to his wife, any neder you make, is annulled. I'm proactively annulling it. So let's assume for a moment in that model, what are the mechanics? Is it the pshat that the neder first devolves upon the woman, and then at the split second that it devolves upon the woman, it's batal, or is it the pshat that this proactive declaration prevents the neder from ever actually devolving upon the woman at all? Right? Fundamental shaila. So here the chiluk. So there are two ways we could look at it. So it's proactively annulled, but let's say the woman makes the neder is chal, and then boom, the second after the neder is chal, the revocation is chal as well. Or the revocation that creates like a nether iron dome, right? So what happens? The nether can never pierce the dome at all. The nether never takes effect upon her. So the Gemara says, "The ma'afkamin, I mean, who cares? I mean, what does it really matter?" The Gemara says, "I'll tell you why it matters." Kegon de atvis achrina bahadein nedara. Listen to this, Rabbi Osai. It matters where someone else latches onto her nether. Now, what does that mean? So let's say the following case. Let's say a woman says, "I'm going to be a nazir. I'm going to be in the zero," she says. So I'll say, so what happens? And then someone else hears her make that declaration. And what does he say? You know, gamani. Right? Me too. Me too. So also, that's the concept of hatfasa. By the way, you could do that. You could latch onto someone else. You hear someone make a neder, you could latch onto their neder by saying, me too. Right? Gamani. Or ani kaze. Whatever different lashon you want to use. So say, listen to this. So Rachel makes a neder, so she's going to be in a zero. Remember, Reuven already said, whatever neder you make, I'm proactively annulling it. She makes a neder to be in a zero. And then some other guy, we'll just call him Guy, goes ahead and hears her neder and says, oh, me too, I'm also going to be a nazir. So the question is, what's the status of that hatfasa? What's the status of that guy who latched onto her neder? Now listen to this. I amrit cholin hadya tefisusa. So I will say, if you want to say that the mechanics of proactive revocation are such, that when she makes the nether is chal on her for a split second, and then what? And then the revocation, you know, kicks in. So if you say that the nether actually is valid for, even just for a split second, then what? Yeah. Then the hatfasa, the other guy's nether, works as well. Because all you need is for her nether to be valid for a moment, and that could trigger ultimately the affirmation of his nether as well. On the other hand, I amrit lo chalin. But if you say that again, you create that nether iron dome, and therefore proactive revocation prevents her nether from ever actualizing, then what? Then lo. Then lo ika mishasha. Then ultimately, again, her nether has no validity, and therefore what? And therefore his hatfasa, his latching onto that nether, has no validity as well. So we'll say, see, you see, it's not just an academic question, it actually has mamish lemais ramifications. So what is the lachna? We'll say, so remember, we're asking a very specific question now in Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer, you are the guy who believes in proactive revocation. Tell us, what are the mechanics of proactive revocation? Does that proactive revocation prevent the nether from ever devolving upon the woman, meaning it never takes effect? Or do we say, no, it takes effect for a moment, but the moment it takes effect, the proactive revocation kicks in and prevents it from remaining on her? So what's the halacha? Tashma, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, im hafer nedarim shabo lichlal iser, lo yafer nedarim shalo bo lichlal iser. So I'll say, remember again, what did Rabbi Eliezer say? Rabbi Eliezer's logic in the Mishnah was very interesting. His logic was that if a husband could prevent nidarim that already became usur from remaining usur, that it goes without saying that he should be able to prevent nidarim from shelo bo lichlal isur. He should be able to prevent nidarim from ever actualizing. So what do you see from that lashon? Shnamina lo chalin. I will say, it sounds like from that argument that what? That Rabbi Eliezer is literally saying that what? That proactive revocation prevents the nidarim from ever taking effect. To which the Gemara says, no. Mi katani she'in ba'in, does the Mishnah say that they never come to the asr? Shelo ba'u katani, right? That means, Rabbi Eliezer says, they have not yet come to isr, adayin lo ba'u. They have not yet come to isr, but they can become isr. In other words, what Rabbi Eliezer is not saying over there is that the nedarim will never become isr. What he's saying is that they have not yet become usr. They have not yet created isr. But what? Let's see. But what? But they have the capacity to create isr. And the moment that they create isr, that is when the proactive revocation will kick in and ultimately prevent them from remaining usr. So that deal, that statement in the Mishnah, does not answer the question one way or the other. So the Gemara goes right to Tashma. Amar lahen Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer said to the Chachamim, Uma b'makum she'in meifer nidre atzmo mishenadar meifer nidre atzmo ad shelo yadar. Now also listen to this. So the Gemara now here quotes another brayse, actually quoting a Tosefta. And in the Tosefta, what does Rabbi Eliezer say to the Chachamim? He says like this. It was when a person makes their own neder, so could I be meifer? Could I annul my own neder? Of course, the answer to that is no. I can't annul my own nether. Remember, again, if I make a nether, I want it annulled. I can go to a Talmud Chacham, I can go to a Beis Din. They can annul my nether, but a person can't annul their own nether. Yet, there is something very interesting that I can do. I can be mefer nidre azma achlo yidor. I can engage Rabbi Hussein in what we call proactive revocation. That I can engage in. Rabbi Hussein, now what does that mean, that I could go ahead and engage in proactive revocation? Look at the rush. So the rush is in the left hand column. It's a little bit down in the rush. Mefer nidro atzmo shelo yidar kidar parak dal nidarim harotz shelo yis kaimu nidarim shal kol hashana yam bless you yam brosh hashana v'yomer kol nidarim shani osed lidar bezu hashana yu b'tenim. So remember, we had this earlier on in the Masechta. Essentially, again, this is our kol nidre. Right? Then what happens? I can't annul my own nedar, but you know what I can do? On Rosh Hashanah, I can get up and I can make a declaration that says, I don't want my nedarim to be chal. I don't want my nedarim ultimately to be valid. So listen to this argument. Rabbi Eliezer says, when it comes to an individual, I can't annul my own nedarim, but what can I do? I can create proactive revocation for my nedarim. So therefore again, so mefer nidre atzmo, so ad shelo yidor, makom shemefer nidre ishto mishetidor, eino din sheyafer nidre ishto, to ad shelo tidor. So we'll say, listen to Rabbi Lez's argument. Rabbi Lez says like this, if when it comes to my own nidarim, I don't have the ability to be made for my nidarim after I've made them, but I do have the ability to proactively annul my nidarim, then what? Then when it comes to my wife, where I do have the rights of revocation, then it goes, meaning once she's made the neder, then it goes without saying that what? That I should have the opportunity and ability to go and proactively annul her nidarim. To which the Gemara says, my love, the ishto dumya delay. So do we not say that, that seems to have a pretty cogent argument. So can we not say that therefore again the dynamics of revocation for my wife should be the same as for me? Mahu delo chaylin. So we'll say, just like by me, if I go ahead and I engage, I take advantage of this proactive revocation, and on Rosh Hashanah I proactively annul all my vows, what does that do? That prevents, ultimately, again, all of my nadar from ever taking effect. Af ishto nami delo chaylin. So too, again, what? So too, when I proactively revoke my wife's vows, what does that do? It prevents it from ever taking effect. And therefore, again, it appears that we've answered our kasha, that when Rabbi Eliezer says that you could proactively annul your wife's vows, what does that really mean, proactively annul? It means it prevents those vows from ever taking effect at all. To which the Gemara says, lo. No, not necessarily. Rather, haki di isa, v'haki di isa. We'll say, not necessarily true, meaning it's quite possible and probable that what? Each of these dynamics are separate. Yes, when it comes to the proactive revocation of my own vows, inachinami, I have the ability to proactively annul those vows in a way that what? In a way that prevents them from ever devolving upon me. But it's possible that in the case of my wife, although I have the ability and opportunity or right of proactive revocation, the way that works is how? That the neder is first chal on her for a split second, and then after it's chal on her, then what? Then lemaisa, again, it's revoked. But it's not a proactive revocation that prevents it from ever taking effect even for that moment. So we'll say, the point the Gemara is making, we haven't answered the question. We're still stuck in the question. Because the Gemara is trying to bring proof after proof after proof, and the Gemara is dismissing those proofs as simply not really answering the question in totality. Next.
Why is the Gemara automatically assuming to assume that it's not chal at all? Why can't you just say, like, it's chal for a second and then it's...
You mean for him, for the husband?
Right.
Oh, because that when I didn't read the whole thing, but the Rush's Lashon over here, the Gemara's Lashon, Daf Chof Gimel, clearly implies that it's never chal at all. That the proactive revocation by one's personal proactive revocation, PPR, as it's known, right? Ultimately, again, prevents the neder from ever being chal. That's the Gemara makes that clear. That's the dynamic there. So that we know, and that nobody argues on. The interesting, the Gemara makes the assumption that if that works for me, and I can't even annul my nedarim after I've made them, certainly for my wife, where I can annul her nedarim, where once she's already made them, the proactive revocation should prevent it from ever devolving. To which the Gemara says, no, hakidisa v'hakidisa, not necessarily apples and oranges, two different processes.
Not things that should be preemptive instead of
proactive. Preemptive? Okay, thank you. I appreciate that. Right, the Daf Yomi General Counsel has spoken. I appreciate that. Preemptive. Thank you. Thank you. All right. What's going to be the bill for that? Think about it. Thank you. Okay. So I will. Moshe will go back on the recording. Okay. Thank you. Right, if you could put it in a mat. Can you do a voiceover? Still do a voiceover? Maybe, if you see my lips moving on the video, but it's someone else's voice. Good. Preemptive. Shikoyach. Says the Gemara. I will say, if anyone else have anything they want to contribute before I go on. So the Gemara says the following. So Tashma, I will say another Braisa. So this we're going to start today, but we're not going to get to finish this. This will take us into tomorrow's daf a little bit. So Tashma, let's at least begin this particular idea. So Tashma, Amru lo l'Rabbi Eliezer. So we'll say, listen to this. So remember, Rabbi Eliezer's whole chap is this kavachomer. This is building on the Tosefta. Sizzle chap is this kavachomer. And they will say the kavachomer, if you think about it, is actually a very intuitive kavachomer. What he's saying is, if I have the ability, essentially the kavachomer is like this. If I have the ability to reverse something, then I should have the ability to what? To what? To prevent it, to preemptively prevent it from ever going ahead and happen. Right? That's his kavachomer. That's his whole idea. So therefore, again, if I could go ahead and reverse, my wife has made a vow. I have the right to annul that, to annul the vow. So I have the right to reverse that vow. If I have the right to reverse, because we'll say, remember, the logic is, it should be harder, it is harder, to reverse an already existing reality than it is to what? To prevent it from ever occurring. So once we've demonstrated that I have the ability to reverse reality, then I should have the ability to prevent it from ever occurring. So therefore, again, if I have the ability to reverse my wife's neder, I should absolutely have the right to what? To prevent it from ever devolving upon her. So now the Gemara says to Rabbi Eliezer, I'm a little Rabbi Eliezer, suppose you just so you should know that logic actually doesn't work. And I'll tell you why it doesn't work. Uma mikvah shema'alas hatmei mitumasan ein matzil ala tahorim. Also, listen to this. A mikvah, which has the ability to be ma'aleh atmeim. If somebody's tameh and they walk into a mikvah, so what happens? They're tahor. Yet what? Ein matzil al hatahorim mi tameh. Rabbi, listen to this. Let's say a person says, look, I know it's going to be a rough day. There's going to be tumah everywhere. So you know what? Let me take a proactive dunk. Right? Let me go ahead. Let me kind of like proactively shield myself, blanket myself with tara in order to prevent myself from becoming tumah. So also, of course, we know that doesn't work. Se'in matzil ala tara milatame. So we'll say, listen to this. Adam, she'in malas atmei mitumasam. So we'll say, again, we know that a person who does not have the ability to change the state of sleep. So the example that the Ran gives with this is that let's say there's a ring. The ring is tame. A person is tar, they swallow the ring. Right? And then let's say they regurgitate the ring afterwards. What's the status of the ring? What's the status of the ring? Right? The ring is tame. Aye, but one second, but it was ingested by a being that is tar. So we'll say it doesn't work that way, right? I don't have the ability to change the state of a tar, of a tame item. Then ein odin shelo yatzil ala tahara milatame. Then all the more so that what? All the more so that lemaisa, again, I should not have the ability to go ahead and prevent something from becoming tahar. So from becoming tameh. Now listen to this halacha for just a moment. So the Ran says the following. If halacha lemaisa, I go ahead and I take a ring and I swallow it. And let's say I'm tahar, the ring, and the rings, and the, I'm tahar, and the ring is tahar. And now I walk into a home in which there is a corpse, there's tumas meis. So we'll say, I become tame. But yet, what's bless you? But what's the status of the ring? The status of the ring, interestingly enough, is it remains tahar. So we'll say, here the point that Gemara is making, they're trying to make to Rabbi Eliezer, is your logic doesn't work, right? Your logic doesn't work. And the reason why your logic doesn't work is because lemaisa, again, there are times where even though something cannot go ahead and change the state of another thing, but it can prevent that state from ever occurring, and yet there are other things that could change the state of certain items, but yet what? Cannot proactively go ahead and prevent a change in state. Let me say it clearer. Rabbi Eliezer's whole argument is based on the logic that if I could change something, I could prevent it from ever occurring. And all the Gemara is just pointing out is that's not the case. A mikvah could change something, right? That's what a mikvah does. It changes the state of something from tummy to tar. But can a mikvah prevent a change of state? That's a prior problem. No, you can't change. You can't proactively go to the mikvah and guard yourself against tuma. A person cannot change the state of the tame ring. But yet, interestingly enough, what can I do? I could prevent the ring from ever becoming tame. So therefore, again, the Gemara says, Shmamina lo chaylan. It would appear based on this. Now, I will say, now, I'll quote to you from the Ran. The Ran says, Mid kamevim raya, mimashe gufa adamonea es hatavas mi lekabel tuma. From the fact that they're bringing a raya, that a person's body can go ahead and prevent the ring from ever becoming tame, shmamina lo chalyon. It would appear that lamaisa, the neder never takes effect to begin with. So the idea that the Gemara is quoting over here, now again, remember, on one hand, what they're questioning is Rabbi Eliezer's entire premise. On the other hand, Rabosai, this case of the person who swallows the ring, seems to be a good raya. Because what happens when the person swallows the ring? He prevents the ring from ever becoming tameh. And now the novelty, of course, is even though what? Even though his body becomes tameh, that which is absorbed into his body never becomes tameh. So it appears that what that braisa really represents is this idea that there is the possibility to proactively shield something from ever-changing state. If that's the case, then lemaisa, again, it would appear that according to Rabbi Eliezer, proactive revocation actually what? Proactive revocation actually prevents the neder from ever devolving upon the woman. So we'll say, we're actually going to stop here. We're going to stop at this moment. So let me just tell you where we're stopping. Because we're stopping over here midstream. And in this midstream, what's happening is, we're still in the midst of our kasha. Here's what we know. What we know is that the Chachamim hold that there is no proactive revocation. They don't hold of this entire idea. You can't proactively annul Nedarim. What Rabbi Eliezer is saying is you can't proactively annul Nedarim. Everyone, by the way, agrees that you can't proactively uphold Nedarim. What we're still trying to figure out is the mechanics of proactive revocation. When Rabbi Eliezer says you can't proactively affirm, what does that mean? Does that mean that the neder never devolves upon the woman? Or does it mean that the neder devolves upon her, but the moment it devolves upon her, it is automatically annulled? So that question we still leave off. But so let me just leave you with a quick thought on the parasha before we conclude the shiur for today. So from the beginning of Parashas Ekev, the pasuk says a beautiful, Torah says a beautiful pasuk. V'haya ekev tishmu'un esa mishpatim ha'ele ushmartem va'asisem osam. And you will go ahead and you will shmart them. You will literally guard them. You will keep them, and you will perform them. V'shamar Hashem Elokecha Elokcha Esabris Vesachesa Shenishpa Lavosecha. And the Ribono Shel Olam will go ahead and will keep for you, will guard for you, the bris, the covenant, the chesed, the kindness that He has sworn to do for your forefathers. So we'll say, so again, you know, Rashi HaKadosh has the beautiful idea of Ekev Tishmu'un. What does it mean, Ekev? So Rashi says, Ema mitzvos hakalos sha'adam dash ba'akav of Tishmu'un. Torah is trying to impress upon us the idea that there are certain, quote-unquote, smaller mitzvos that often we trample upon. Certain little things that we trample upon with our ankle. You know, with our heel. So Moshe Rabbeinu is telling us, lesson number one, is that sometimes the greatest accomplishment is not how we treat the big things. Most people have reverence for the big things, right? I'm going to be careful with Shabbos. I'm going to be careful with Kashrus. I'm going to be careful with Taras HaMishpacha. Those are the things, of course, that I'm going to treat very seriously because the mice, those are serious halachas. The Shaila, of course, the real litmus test of one's commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is how I deal with the little things. What about the things that sometimes get so easily trampled? Well, however you define the little things, whether it's Lashon Hara, right? Whether ultimately, again, it's Gaiva, whether it's how much I put to have on my own covet, whether it's all the little things that we're learning about in Mesilas Yesharim, that really is the true testament, ultimately, again, to my commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I will say, in that way, relationship with Hashem is no different than any other relationship. You know, in a marriage, for example, so I will say, what makes a good marriage versus a mediocre marriage? So the truth is, it's not at the end of the day. Good marriage is not all. Good husband is the one who buys his wife a big anniversary gift. Right? It could be it's nice to get your wife a gift for anniversary. It's very nice. That's not what makes a good marriage. What makes a good marriage is how you walk into the house at the end of a long day. Right? Mamish, how do you talk to your wife when you're feeling in a rotten mood? Right? When you just want to be left alone for a couple of minutes, but your wife wants to speak to you, how do you relate to her? Right? The most say, those are the moments. So again, you know, you could get the most beautiful, beautiful gift for anniversary, but at the end of the day, Lamaisa, it's the moments, Sha'adam Dash Ba'akrav, the moments ultimately that are so little. Same thing with Chino Chabanim Va'abanos, how we raise our children. You know, the truth is, very often, it's not necessarily the school you put them in, or ultimately, again, you know, the SAT course you enroll them in. It's the little things ultimately give the greatest chinuch, how we talk to our children, how our children see us interact with other people, how our children see us talk to our spouses. Those are the little things that ultimately define the character or nature of the relationship. But Rabbi Yitzchak Berditchev makes one additional observation which is so beautiful. He says, if you think about it, this word ushmartem is extraneous, is extra. Again, remember, I'm quoting to you, this is the first pasuk in the parasha. Because Torah could have just said, V'hayat ekev tishmu'un el samishpatim ha'ele. If you will listen to the mitzvos, and ultimately, v'asisem osam, you'll do them. Why does it have to add in, ushmartem v'asisem? You will guard and you will hear, literally, or you will keep and you will hear. I'm sorry. Shmartem literally means you will observe. You will keep them and you will do them. Just take out Ushmat them and just va'asisim. What's the pshat? So the Rebbe says so beautifully, what does the word Ushmarta mean? So we'll say, if you go all the way back to Bereshis, when Yosef HaTzadik retells the story, or I should say, retells his dreams to his brothers and to his father. So what happened? So the brothers get very upset about it. And the Torah says, what's Yaakov's reaction? Va'aviv shamar es hadavar. That ultimately, again, his father literally shamar es hadavar. So Rashi HaKadosh says, what does it mean that Yaakov Avinu guarded the matter? He kept the matter. What does it mean? So Rashi says, Yoshev umetzape masai yavo. That Yaakov Avinu realized that his son had a dream that was foretelling future greatness. And whereas the brothers are dismissive, the brothers are angry, the brothers are jealous, what's Yaakov's reaction? Yoshev umetzape. Shamar means you excitingly guard something. You eagerly anticipate the actualization of something. That's what Shmira means. Shmira doesn't mean to observe something. Shmira doesn't mean to keep something. Shmira means like you can't sit still in your seat because you're excited about an opportunity that is about to unfold. Yaakov Avinu understands that within his son's dreams is a future blueprint for greatness, and he can't wait to see that unfold, says the Rebbe. The Torah is teaching us something incredible over here. Va'aya ekev tishmunas ha-mishpatim, if you will listen to the mitzvahs. So va'asisim osam means that you'll perform them. That when you perform them, be meticulous in the details. When you perform them, pay attention even to the little parts of the mitzvah. Pay attention to the little mitzvahs, and pay attention to the little details in mitzvahs. But Rebbe said there are some times in life where you can't do the spiritual things you want to do. There are some times when you are precluded from doing the things you want to do. So what's your reaction in those moments? Ushmartem. See, Rabbi said, it's not enough just to do the mitzvos. It's not enough just to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. A person has to have an eager excitement. They have to be chomping at the bit to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There has to be a shmira. And that shmira manifests itself in two ways. That there are times in life where I can't do the things that I want to do. So what's my reaction to that? I can't serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu the way that I want to. So we'll say there are two different reactions. One reaction is, whew, wow, that takes a load off me, right? Baruch Hashem, I can't do the things that I want to do. Sure, if I had to do it, of course I would do it. But I'm really happy that this responsibility has been lifted from my shoulders. Someone else is doing it, I don't have to do it. That's not the way the Jew reacts. The Jew reacts to Shmartem. It's an incredible privilege to serve the Ribono Shel Olam. It's an incredible privilege to do mitzvos. It's an incredible mitzvos, incredible privilege to learn Torah. True, is it an awesome responsibility? Yes, it's an awesome and even sometimes overwhelming responsibility. But it's an exceptional zechus, an exceptional privilege. Therefore, says the Rebbe, it's not just enough to observe. But the Torah says, Ushmartem, you have to eagerly anticipate your ability to perform mitzvos. You have to eagerly pine for that opportunity to perform a chesed. You have to eagerly yearn for that opportunity to come to the shir. You have to eagerly yearn for that opportunity to do for another. Not enough just to observe. It always has to be Ushmartem. Yoshev umetzapeh masayavo. When will my next opportunity come about? And you know what that does? Is don't live a life of passively waiting for mitzvah, spiritual opportunities to knock at your door. You have to live a shmira life. And the shmira life is Yoshev umetzapeh masayavo. When am I going to have my next opportunity to grow? When am I going to have my next opportunity for chesed? When am I going to have my next opportunity to accomplish? When will I have my next opportunity ultimately to do for the other? That's the message that Moshe Rabbeinu is giving us. Yes, yes, be careful with the details. Be careful with the performance. Make sure va'asisem. You got to perform. You got to execute. But in those moments where for whatever reason there's no opportunity right in front of you, ushmartem. Don't just wait passively for your opportunities to come to you, but rather what? Eagerly pine for them. Eagerly seek them out. Always recognizing that every moment to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu, every opportunity to serve another is the greatest opportunity, the greatest chus of all. All right, Tabosai. A good Shabbos.